DW Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. This Thursday, the 18th of October, Amasum Talatus here.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe, and as usual, we are live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up on the program, over 500 delegates held a summit in London to speak about tackling sexual exploitation and abuse in the AIDS sector. But critics like Paula Donovan from the Code Blue campaign say little has been done to prosecute perpetrators.
What's happened is we've got this sort of apartheid system where those who are involved in these sectors are actually protected by their organizations.
With Brexit talks stalled in Brussels, British Prime Minister Theresa May outlines her next move.
I will be asking members of Parliament first to recall that we're delivering on a vote of the British people. We gave the British people that choice. They voted to leave the EU. We will be delivering on that vote.
These are some of the stories that we have lined up for you. But first, let's listen to other stories making headlines around the world.
DW News.
I'm Eunice Wanjiru with DW News. British Prime Minister Theresa May came under attack from across Britain's political spectrum on Thursday after saying she was considering a European Union proposal that would keep the UK bound to the bloc's rules for several months longer than originally planned. May earlier spoke to reporters at a summit in Brussels.
When I take that deal back to Parliament, I think members of Parliament will be asking members of Parliament first to recall that we're delivering on a vote of the British people. And I'd also ask them to think about the importance of protecting jobs and livelihoods in the UK, protecting our security in the UK, and protecting the union of the United Kingdom. I believe a good deal for the UK will be one that does deliver on the vote of the British people and does all those things.
European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said he was confident a deal could be reached on the UK's exit from the European Union, but he said it was likely more time would be needed. Senior ministers from Britain, France and the Netherlands on Thursday pulled out of a major investment conference in Saudi Arabia, expressing deep concern over the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. US President Donald Trump asked Turkish authorities to hand over an audio recording that is said to prove that missing journalist Jamal Khashoggi was tortured and killed in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Khashoggi, a columnist from the Washington Post, who was highly critical of the Saudi government, vanished more than 2 weeks ago. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The World Health Organization has warned that the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo could worsen dramatically. The WHO stopped short of declaring a global health emergency, but said there is a danger of the potentially fatal disease spreading to neighboring countries. India's ruling party and the main opposition are both supporting a protest aimed at keeping females of menstruating age from entering one of the world's largest Hindu pilgrimage sites, in what some political observers say is a bid to show up votes ahead of next year's general election. The unrest follows a ruling by the country's top court that the Sabarimala temple in the southern part of the country must allow women of all ages to enter. Authorities in Haiti say at least two people were killed and dozens injured during anti-corruption protests in the country's capital, Port-au-Prince. Thousands of people turned out across the Caribbean country amid growing anger over the alleged misuse of funds from a government program sponsored by Venezuela. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And you're still listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Asum Talatos. And I know that some of you are listening through our Facebook page.
Exactly. Like, goodness, Eze has a thumbs up. Wale Kunem says, we are there. And Agba Timothy says, hello, DW Africa. I'm Timothy, listening from Nigeria. Asumta, over to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know that some other people who are listening through radio.
And that is Bonnie.
Yes. Okay. Now, when aid workers become sex predators, Over 500 delegates held a summit in London to speak about tackling sexual exploitation and abuse in the aid sector. Against that backdrop, Liberians expressed outrage after a recent report described the alleged sexual assaults at a branch of the More Than Me charity in the capital, Monrovia, by a former worker, Macintosh Johnson.
The charity was set up to help vulnerable girls, mainly from the slum community of West Point. But critics like Paula Donovan from the Code Blue campaign said little has been done to prosecute perpetrators, and summits like the one held in London are just mere talking shops. Take a listen.
They've organized a so-called summit with an opportunity for them to preach to invited choir of 500 silent observers. The question and answer period after the high-level speakers have their say is all scripted. The questions vetted in advance and their answers prepared in advance. And it's simply repeating over and over again how they're promising to deal with this issue.
In Liberia, a trial opened against an American charity whose co-founder allegedly raped 30 girls and infected them with HIV. My question is, why are aid organizations or powerful institutions, you know, becoming predators of young girls that they're meant actually to protect?
Well, I think that happens in any instance where accountability is not enforced, where the appropriate authorities in sovereign states are not given the opportunity to do their jobs and to immediately investigate claims and charge, prosecute, and if necessary, convict and punish perpetrators. Instead, these powerful organizations want to deal with them as internal matters.
In case charity organizations, like in this case of Liberia or and the UN, who holds them accountable for the crimes they commit? Because it looks like, you know, a lot of impunity is going on.
In the vast majority of cases, no one holds them accountable. They might lose their jobs, but that's, you know, even that is rare. What's happened is we've got this sort of apartheid system where those who are involved in these sectors, they're supposed to be international civil servants or people who are servicing the disadvantaged communities and communities at risk and people at risk, are actually protected by their organizations from being held to account the way the rest of humankind is held to account when they break the law.
I was speaking to Paula Donovan. Now, on our Facebook page, DW Africa, you can find a video of the protests that were held today in the capital, Monrovia. And I assume that we have some comments there from our users.
Yes, we do. And I have a comment from Sami. She or he says, "I'm still angry. Katie Myler, the charity chief, gets to keep a good health, money in her pocket, and most importantly, her freedom." It's a she. "She gets to walk around in America with her head held high as if she didn't help sentence kids to death in Liberia. She kept quiet about their sexual abuse."
And we have some live comments. One from Michael Dennis, who says, "I'm listening from Monrovia. Congrats to those that took to the streets." Goodness Essay also says, "These allegations couldn't have been taken lightly during the time of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf."
And now, former heads of state Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Joyce Banda, current first ladies, entrepreneurs and activists from across the continent have been meeting in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. The aim is to discuss ways through which they make more positive change in Africa.
And under the auspices of the Shiros Foundation, the influential women shared experiences in their various leadership roles and personal stories in order to motivate other African women to take up leadership roles.
DW's Evelyn Padde in Monrovia spoke to the founder of Shiros, Flossie Manson, about her efforts to make women more visible.
"We started on a research to find these great women and let us start honoring them and letting our young women see great women, because sometimes what you visualize is what you can interpret and know that you can do it. In order to bring the women together, we have all these issues we need to talk about. So if I'm looking for great women, what better way than to have conferences where they can come and talk directly to the people? So you meet them, you hear about them, because you might see her in the book, but it may be far removed from you. Mm-hmm. But when you come to a conference, you get to interact with them. And so that's how we started."
Is it that there weren't African women, or people were not just nominating them to the 100 women at the time?
The women we're there, do you know statistically there have been 7 female presidents in Africa? Most people don't know that.
So maybe African women were not telling their stories to be included among the 100
That's
at the time.
It. But even if they told the story, they would use a technicality. Like in the whole world, Madame Sirleaf is the one that we always mention because she's the one that was democratically elected. Most of them come into the space, like Dr. Joyce Banda got into that space because she was vice president, the president died, and she wasn't elected. You know, with women, that's the issue with women. If a man moved into that position, he's president, everybody hails him. If a woman gets it, well, she wasn't really, she was the vice president. So I think we weren't telling our stories, and we, the women, were not standing to support the women. But we have to change the narrative so people know that women are doing positive things and we can support each other. That saying that women don't support, we have to stop that.
Tell me about the network. Where is Shiwa Foundation visible?
We started out of Ghana, and we are visible in Nigeria. Now we are launching a chapter here in Liberia. We have network in Kenya, Zimbabwe, Malawi. And we've had our forums in different places. We've had it even in Dubai. You know, it's just congregate with women, but it mostly we have like 7 chapters now, Liberia now, and then Cameroon, we are just starting one there.
Evelyn Pade speaking to Flossie Manson, the founder of Shiroz.
Yes, and Isaac, we do have some comments there. Mm-hmm. And Blasius Awonsang says, a woman's worst enemy is herself. Women need to believe that they can be better leaders than men. There are more single women leading their own homes than men, and sometimes these women do a great job raising children while working full-time. But when a man is involved, they cede control over the man. I do agree with him.
Okay, well said. Yeah. Tanon Effendi says, I don't agree. Whenever women want to take a post, they tend to use the women card and talk about how they will stand for women and protect them. But when they get into the positions, they tend to behave totally different. Tell me any woman that has taken a position and really treats women well. There you go.
Okay. All right.
we shall come back to more of these comments whenever we can.
Exactly. Let's look around the world. What's going on? British Prime Minister Theresa May is facing intense criticism at home. That's after admitting that she is considering a European Union proposal that would keep Britain bound to the bloc's rules for several months longer than originally planned.
Now, after the summit of EU leaders in Brussels failed to make enough progress in reaching a divorce agreement, the EU has now suggested more time for striking a trade deal that ensures a frictionless border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Theresa May says that's not acceptable.
What we want is to ensure that the future relationship dealing with the issue of the Northern Irish border comes into place at the end of the implementation period, which, as I've said, we had negotiated that period through to the end of December 2020. In relation to the unity of the 27, right at the very beginning of this process, I said we want the EU to remain strong. It is actually in the interests of the UK, as the near neighbours of the what will be the 27 remaining states of the European Union, for the European Union to remain strong. Now, you asked about the question of the deal and taking that deal back to Parliament. I am confident that we can achieve that good deal, and that when I take that deal back to Parliament, I think members of Parliament will have... I will be asking members of Parliament first to recall that we're delivering on a vote of the British people. We gave the British people that choice. They voted to leave the EU. We will be delivering on that vote. And I'd also ask them to think about the importance of protecting jobs and livelihoods in the UK, protecting our security in the UK, and protecting the union of the United Kingdom.
As we have heard from Theresa May, it looks like she's going to have trouble explaining back home her position.
Exactly. And this is a story I assume to have been following, you know, since it began. And we always bring it to you whenever we can. We have correspondents in Brussels who are always ready to give it to us fresh.
Welcome back to the program with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Just a reminder, you can also listen to this show through our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, young people in Benin City, Nigeria, have been debating on where their future should be and what to do to stop youth to venture into dangerous journeys in search for greener pasture.
You know, the problem with Nigeria is not only corruption, it's more of incompetence. It's not as if they don't want to do the job, they just don't know how to.
We're here to propose solutions, and very soon, in no distant time, young persons will take over business, take over politics, take over everything.
And details of that debate, just go to our page, DW Africa, and follow it there.
Now, Boko Haram insurgency had had many impacts in northeastern Nigeria. Over 2 million people have been displaced, and small-scale farmers were also forced to abandon their farms and agricultural activities, which has resulted into an increasing food scarcity.
This now has forced people displaced by Boko Haram Islamists in the northeast to change their mind of wanting to be hosted by their families and instead go and live in the camps for displaced. Mohammed Alamin has more.
One of the aftermath of Boko Haram violence is the current food scarcity experienced in the northeastern Nigeria, where the major brunt of insurgents' attack has been felt. 7 million of the people in the northeast lack sufficient food to eat, while about one-third of them are in need of urgent food aid. That has forced over 2 million internally displaced people who in the past abandoned the camps and went to live with the host families to go back to the camp in order to get regular meals. Together with them, however, are the host families. Northern Nigerian who has been hosting those IDPs, they are now relocating into the IDP camps so that they can get daily meals. This has resulted into fear that the lack of food could drive people to desperate measures, including selling their possessions for food. Hadiza Maazu is a political analyst.
Foodstuffs is not sufficiently available and very expensive as well. Most of these villagers abandon their homes and farmland and reside at the IDP camp for a better living, where they can get at least 3 square meals a day. So we are pleading to the government, both state and federal, to please encourage farmers by providing them with security and farming incentives so as to produce more food for consumption for their own better living.
The amount of land being used to grow food has dropped by almost 70% over the past year as the violence has disrupted farming and driven people off the land. Umar Baba, a journalist from northeastern Nigeria, believes that the IDPs have no alternative rather than rushing to camps where 3 square meals is guaranteed.
As we know, IDP camps are being supported by NEMA and other international agencies. Some families prefer to join the IDPs in the camps because there is free food and they feel more secured. They can get about 3 square meals no matter how a day. So people feel it is justified because the food crisis does not only affect the IDPs, even ordinary citizens are affected.
Umar Baba also talked about the consequences of this situation.
Food crisis brings hunger, and hunger generates thefts and other minor crimes in society. And these minor crimes, as time goes on, isolate individuals and they become very terrible to the very society they are supposed to support.
Borno State government recently said the world need to pay more attention to the region in order to avert worse crises, even after the ongoing Boko Haram crisis was over.
That was Mohammed Alamin.
And Assumpta, as you heard in that story, it's desperate times calling for desperate measures, you know.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you have been living with your family and then you have to go back to the camp.
Exactly. All together in the same, you know, problem. So you share it together and even the problem. So you go back to the camp for food.
Yeah. Okay.
U-Zone.
In Your Zone this week, we'll be listening to a story of a young Ghanaian who became among the most influential foreign entertainers of South Korea. Sam Okere went to South Korea 9 years ago. His dream was to study computer engineering, but when he arrived there, he couldn't speak the language and he realized that he was one of the very few black people making their home on the Korean peninsula.
But Assumpta, sometimes being different from everyone else can have its advantages. Although Sam was confronted by racism when he arrived, he found a way to turn his negative experiences into something positive and wound up becoming the most famous black man in South Korea along the way. And now his fame is having an impact on the whole country, as Henne van Heferen found out.
All right, hey guys, nice to meet you. My name is Sam Autry, and I'm an entertainer in Korea.
This is Sam Autry, born and raised in Ghana, also known as the most famous black man of South Korea. I meet him at a juice bar in a popular district in Seoul, the capital of South Korea.
So she's gonna mix the juice real quick, so why is that just gonna...
Sam can hardly walk the streets of Seoul without people asking him for autographs.
It's crazy. Sometimes I'd have to wear a mask and a hat, you know, sometimes. And people from different age groups are coming up to me. I have, like, grandmothers coming up to me, you know, babies coming up to me, young adults coming up to me, high schoolers coming up to me. Like, people from different age ranges coming up to me and asking for photos and autographs. This is something that if somebody told me would happen a few years ago, I'd be like, nah, that would never, ever be possible. But, you know, it's here, and I'm enjoying it.
And that's because when Sam first set foot on Korean soil 9 years ago, he faced a totally different reality. Sam moved from Ghana to Korea with a scholarship to study computer engineering. In the beginning, life wasn't easy.
Of course, at that time, too, a lot of Koreans were not as open to different, you know, types of people from different places. They were not really exposed to different races and different cultures and all of them. So people would openly come up to you and just say really bad stuff to you.
Like,
you know, you black monkey, go back to where you're coming from. Like, I did have people like that will say really bad stuff. And sometimes, you know, you go to a place and, you know, you sit and people don't want to sit next to you. Nobody wants to come around you. Like, that was pretty, you know, it was heartbreaking because I came from an environment where everybody was just equal. You know, people looked at people like, yeah.
Were you prepared for something like this?
Absolutely not. It was a bit overwhelming at first. I was like, wow. That was actually the first time it really hit me that racism was real, you know, because for me, it was always some sort of, you know, concept that did not really exist to me. Like, I've read about it and everything, but I didn't really experience it until I came to Korea. So that really opened my eyes to what racism really was.
South Korea is one of the most ethnically homogenous countries in the world. Over 99% of South Koreans identify as ethnically Korean. Foreigners have been moving to the peninsula only very recently. Sam thinks that is one of the explanations for the racism.
In a way, because they're not used to that, they get intimidated, and the reaction that they have makes them come off as racist, but sometimes it's not that. It's just mere ignorance and lack of exposure.
At first, Sam was very frustrated until he realized that wasn't going to help him.
I was like, is there any better solution other than me getting angry and also trying to fight back? And I realized that it was in the language.
Sam found his way and he made lots of Korean friends in the process. And then things really started to change when he entered the Korean entertainment business. He started off with small roles in commercials, but he got his big break on a variety show called Abnormal Summit.
A report by Rene van Heferen. Assumpta, your thoughts on Sam Autry? I like that bit myself.
Yes, I mean, I think he is having fun while making money.
And you had you know?
I wouldn't mind doing that.
I like
that,
the fact that turning his negative experiences into something positive, because actually the South Koreans had not been exposed.
Yeah.
And then he makes friends along the way.
In other words, they
had not traveled so much.
That's very true. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Speaking out.
Today, Benin City was on fire as hundreds of young people came together at the University of Benin to debate on migration. As we all know, though, ongoing political unrests, civil wars, and also American Dream have a big impact on many young Africans.
And according to many, these are the causes that make many of them to embark on dangerous journeys and leave their countries in search for a better life. Along the way, though, many of them encounter deadly challenges. Human traffickers who take advantage of the situation and also make the lives of these young ones a living hell. is just one among the many challenges.
It is, I guess, against this background that DW is in Benin City, Nigeria today, sharing stories of young people who have experienced the hands-on of human traffickers and decided to go back home to tell their stories. But why was this debate staged in Benin City? Earlier today, I spoke to Maya Brown, head of DW's English for Africa department, to know the answers to that and more about the debate.
Yes, actually, we wanted really to go to the place where things are happening. And Benin City is one of the hubs of illegal migration in Nigeria. It is the place where it all started, where people in the 80s started to bring young girls as prostitutes to Italy. And it's a really big industry, if I can say that today. So even me, when I was talking to people, everybody would know someone who is into human trafficking, who would know someone who can get you to Libya and then over to Italy. So it's like a really big problem, especially in Benin City.
The theme this year is your future here or abroad. Does this theme resonate with the situation on the ground, according to what you have been hearing?
Yes, it has been very interesting because at the final end of the whole debate, Edith Kimani, our host from DW News, she's been asking, been mainly students coming to the debate, so what's your future? Is it here or abroad? And it was a very mixed reaction, since someone were even saying here and abroad. But what was interesting is really that young people are very frustrated that they feel that they don't have a future here in Nigeria. I think they want to stay in their mother country and not really want to leave, but then they don't see a future here. And maybe we listen to one of the panelists, that is Divine Oguchi Omale, who used to be a member of the student union, and he puts it into his words.
If I say, okay, let me stay in Nigeria, let me educate myself in Nigeria, I'm a graduate of the University of Benin, government want to give appointment, they look at somebody that is in Cambridge University, they look at somebody in Harvard University, they don't place emphasis on their own products.
Could you tell us one of the story that you thought that came out very strongly, or you were really impressed by that story?
But what is interesting that you actually, wherever you go, you will find someone who has been all the way up to Libya. There has been one guy who has said he's been living in Libya for 6 years, so he knows about it, and he says it's really not the way you want to go. And that was really a general claim here from several people. People have to take the future in their own hands. And what struck me really was the story of a self-made millionaire who was part of the panel. He's actually from Benin City, and he now runs a big company built a factory in Uganda, and he started off like very young when he was 13. And let's listen to him because it's really interesting for what he says.
The problem here in this country is that you and I, we are not seeing the opportunity. The fact that there is a problem in Nigeria makes in Nigeria a land full of opportunity. How? If you can identify the problem in your area, work out a solution for that problem, you become a millionaire. That is all you need.
Nigerians there speaking from Benin about migration. Earlier, I was speaking to Maya Brown, head of DW's English for Africa department.
And that last comment, you know, in Maya's interview, I like it. You know, he's motivating other youth, you know, to look at the opportunities around them and become millionaires like him.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have some comments here. Prince Eric Trust says, politicians are the problem of Nigeria. Please, can the United Nations reform our political system? I don't think the United Nations can meddle into reforming any system of a government.
You know what? I really don't like it. All the time, you know, pointing fingers to you don't do the right thing and I'm suffering.
Yeah.
That's why I'm suffering. You know, do something for yourself.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, now Promise Isaac says, African government has sold the future of their own people to the West, and they are wasting our resources, money, and other things. They don't care and no plan for their citizens, especially the Nigerian government.
Now, we have this one from WhatsApp follower. He says, until Germany and other EU countries stop providing safe havens for corrupt African leaders to stash their money, Germany will continue to receive an avalanche of migrants from Africa. Okay. There we come to the end of the show. On behalf of the production crew and the rest of the Africa Link team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latos. Thank you for listening.
And bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.